Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
The Prudhoe Bay oil fields and Trans-Alaska Pipeline have caused an average of 504 spills annually on the North Slope since 1996. There were 4,532 spills between 1996 and 2004, totaling more than 1.9 million gallons of toxic substances, including diesel, crude oil, and hydraulic oil. It was just in March of 2006 that Alaska's North Slope witnessed the largest oil leak in its history. So says the Wilderness Society. And when you return, you'll hear what other environmental spokespeople have to say about BP, oil, and America's future. It's what you come to hear on the Wildside News. It came as a shock when that global energy goliath, British Petroleum, the green company with the green daisy for its logo, shut off access to what is supposed to be our oil, representing fully 8% of our daily oil supply. Many are shocked that this happened without any warning. But I guess it depends on who you listen to. We listened to two views from the Alaska Wilderness League and the North Alaska Environmental Center, who have been challenging BP's promises and claims with each new spill.
This is Pamela A. Miller, and I'm with the Northern Alaska Environmental Center. We're up in Fairbanks, Alaska. For years, there's been chronic problems with leaks and spills and news about the corroded pipelines on the North Slope, as well as the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. And so this problem in Prudhoe Bay should have come to no surprise by BP or the state. There was a spill in March, the largest spill of crude oil in the Prudhoe Bay oil fields to date. It was roughly a quarter million gallons of oil, and that spill was caused by corrosion. Every year, there's over 500 spills in the oil fields of 40 different toxic substances, including crude oil. Many of those spills are due to corrosion. Back in 1999, when BP bought the oil company ARCO in a huge merger, corrosion was one of the issues that the public raised, as well as the state's Department of Environmental Conservation. So this has been a long-standing problem. So that it's come to this situation of the action that BP took this week is rather perplexing. That it got to this situation. What this tells me today is that the oil companies that are the operators, BP and ConocoPhillips, and Exxon is also a partner in the operation of the oil fields, that they haven't been doing their job in terms of keeping a safe and environmentally sound oil field, and that they can't be trusted to go into new places like they're talking about now, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, our nation's coast, and other sensitive places in the Arctic, like there's a special place called Teshupuk Lake that a new leasing program has proposed.
So the question that I wonder is, why now? All of a sudden, it couldn't have come at a worse time. And is that part of why it's becoming such an issue?
First, it could have come at a worse time. It could have come in the dead of winter, because experts like Amory Lovins and even former CIA Director James Woolsey have pointed out the strategic vulnerability of the whole Trans-Alaska pipeline system. We have one pipeline from the North Slope coming down across the state of Alaska, and that's where the oil gets shipped on to tankers, and you know where the Exxon Valdez oil spill happened at that point back in '89. If it happened in winter, this oil sitting in the pipeline could congeal like, as Amory Lovins puts it, the world's longest chapstick. That said, that's the question everybody is asking, is why did it get to the point that BP felt, you know, took action of saying they were going to shut down the whole oil field instead of fixing these problems in a regular basis? That's a question for BP.
Well, that's the question I'm asking, too. It was a decision on their part because, quite honestly, you know, over the years, they're supposed to be somehow conducting maintenance, regular maintenance, to prevent exactly this kind of thing. And that was the promise that was provided to justify this Trans-Alaskan pipeline.
BP and other oil companies have made promise after promise over the years that defies what their actual practices are. You know, oil is a dirty business. There will be leaks and spills and risks, you know, huge oil spills at various points in the system. You know, you can't have oil development in a wilderness like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Over the years in the oil field, the workers have been the ones who have spoken up and through the press brought out their concerns about how vulnerable the pipeline is. Back in 2001, Wall Street Journal had a major article about the problems that were happening there. That was after BP had bought out ARCO and you had the entire Prudhoe Bay field run by one company instead of two, less competition, less oversight up on the slope. But the other thing that happened is you had administrations, both federal and state, with our Governor Murkowski, who are not enforcing and weren't monitoring. They've cut staff in the regulatory agencies to less than bare bones. We've had conflict of interest in the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Organization, which is our state agency that maintains the safety of the pipeline. The administration simply has not done its regulatory job. And we had the spill in March. The state government could have imposed fines on BP. We've seen nothing since March in terms of that action. We do know that the EPA and the Department of Transportation, you know, there is a criminal investigation going on with respect to the March spill, and that investigation may have been what, because the federal agency required this pigging of the pipeline, which is an internal inspection of what really is the situation, we are finally learning on the outside how bad it is. But the workers were telling BP management and the media for many years that there's very big problems at Prudhoe Bay.
Right. The spill in March was pretty much kept under the ice, so to speak, until it was forced into the public's arena.
Right. The spill in March was interesting because there was a very big delay of informing people how big the spill really was.
That's exactly
right.
So
that they could get the pools of oil pretty well cleaned up by the time the major media got up there.
Well, what I'm wondering is, was there actually a spill event that a significant spill event that now forced this decision by BP to shut this down, or was this more or less a preventative? Is it more preventative on the part of BP to protect itself against further litigation? There was a spill, but it wasn't of any grand consequence. Am I right about that?
The spill was discovered as they were inspecting the pipe. I think the big change that I see from what had, you know, from kind of the normal operations where nobody was really looking over their shoulder at all, even in the face of major spills. With the March spill, it was a pipeline regulated by the state. Due to a number of loopholes in the regulations, it could have been regulated by the federal government. And the federal government did become involved due to issues that had been raised about the operation of that pipeline. So they required this further inspection of a certain class of pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
It's something like 22 miles of pipeline. On the slope, there's 1,600 miles of pipes in 450 miles of corridors, most of which are only regulated by the state of Alaska. The federal government doesn't have the same handle on all those other pipes, and there's a lot of questions on those as well. But this pipe, where the spill occurred in March, feeds into the very big sales pipeline that then goes directly into Pump Station 1 of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. The wall of that pipe they found in that inspection had lost 80% of its steel due to corrosion. And we have a state legislator who said, well, I think it's Representative John Harris, said, well, we don't want another Exxon Valdez. So there were risks in this system of very dangerous to humans as well as to the environment situation up there, apparently. That's what I can garner out of the news.
My take on this is that it's not going to help the cause for expanding oil exploration into Teshikpuk Lake. And this almost could be considered a, sort of a Katrina event, in the sense that it's a wake-up call that these things are that these systems are falling apart, and that, quite honestly, the promises and that we keep hearing about really don't carry much weight.
This is a wake-up call that the claims of BP, Exxon, and the other companies seeking to drill in the world's most sensitive places, like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and Teshikpuk Lake, are hollow, and that they don't have their affairs in order in terms of conducting safe and clean operation, and that they have such power over our state and federal governments right now in terms of political influence that the regulators aren't doing their job. So between the political situation, the sheer economic power, and their priorities of making huge profits but not investing them into doing the very things that they claim they're doing, has led us to this situation today.
I'm just curious what you're hearing in terms of the time frame for these repairs to be made. We're hearing anything from a month to a couple of months, and what are you hearing today? Because it changes every day.
It will change every day. That is anybody's guess, and that's the kind of question only BP can answer.
Now, does some of this pipeline that may have to be repaired run over? I know typically they do a lot of their work in the winter because the ground is frozen, and therefore the roads give them accessibility. Do you know if that's going to pose a problem in terms of their efforts to deal with whatever this problem is that they're shutting down the pipeline for?
The area of pipelines that are involved with the March spill, as well as the pipeline that they identified on Sunday, it's right in the heart of Prudhoe Bay where there's lots of roads. So access isn't an issue. I think personnel, and this is an unprecedented sort of event, and figuring out how they're going to do it, you know, as you have these over 1,000 pipelines from the wells, you know, you have hundreds of well pads, it all feeds into fewer and fewer bigger pipes. Well, this is one of those biggest pipes before it hits the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
Gotcha.
The other thing I will mention, though, as part of the timing, our legislature is in special session over the issue of oil and gas taxes and a contract that the Governor Murkowski negotiated in secret with the three big oil companies over a gas pipeline to bring existing known gas from Prudhoe Bay down to the lower 48. And that pipeline negotiations is at its hilt. It's at the peak. And the regulators, you know, whether that's influenced the regulators' ability to do their jobs, clearly it's part of the mix of the politics of very hardball politics up here. And there's many candidates for governor who are not happy with the secret negotiated contract on the gas pipeline. So that is one factor, and it's impossible to tell how exactly is playing out.
It's hitting us in a very difficult way. But again, I'm going to put a positive spin on this. I think it is indicative of the fact that the promises are as thin-walled as the pipes themselves.
Oh, that's a very good way of saying it.
And that the promises are going to be ruptured in the future as they are and as they have been in the past. And so, therefore, it's time for everyone to question in a much more intensive way the promises, because they just don't hold up. So we'll have to see.
I couldn't have said it better.
Use
that idea in the future.
You can always just refer people to the Wild Side News. That's what it's about.
Well, I'm going to be looking a little more deeply into exactly what the state did over the last couple of years regarding the corrosion issue, and reanalyzing this oil spill database to find out, among the causes of spills, how corrosion ranks out, because I know it's really high.
We're talking with Pam Miller, who's with the North Alaska Environmental Center, and she's going to keep us informed in the future here. Pam, you're going to call me and let me know what's going on at any point here, right?
Yes, I sure will. We'll have lots of updates from Alaska, and keep watching to keep Alaska on the wild side.
Now, if people want to contact you and your organization, what's the best way for them to do so?
We have a website, www.northern.org, and you can find out information about our organization there, and I'll be posting updates.
Very good. Pam, thanks a lot for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Okay, thanks a lot.
We continue our discussion about the situations developing in Alaska with BP shutting off the oil. And now to give us another perspective is Kristen Miller. She's with the Alaska Wilderness League. Kristen, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
What's your interest, the Alaska Wilderness League, in, first of all, in Alaska and the wilderness?
Our mission is to work to protect some of the most important and ecologically significant wild places in Alaska. We work out of D.C. from a legislative perspective, but we work to protect Alaskan wilderness.
You're very familiar with the situation that's developing in terms of BP shutting down the pipeline for
purposes.
Why don't you give us your perspective? What's your take on what's happening there?
It's a very important issue for us, and we're watching it very closely. I think from our perspective, what this is a very salient example of what's going up on Alaska's North Slope. A lot of the areas that we're working to protect are near Prudhoe Bay, where the pipeline was just recently shut down. The fact that BP has chosen to shut these pipelines down does not stem from a very new problem. It's an old problem, and it's a problem that we've been seeing for years. That the bottom line is oil drilling up on Alaska's North Slope is a very dirty business. And, you know, as we watch Congress and drilling proponents try to get into new areas, some of the most special areas, we think, in Alaska, like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, and there's other areas on the western, an area called Shetpuck Lake that might, you know, be open for leasing as early as this September. We think this is of great concern, because I think we're seeing firsthand how dirty the oil business is up there.
I'm trying to figure this one out, because the oil interests are very often clever at creating spin. I don't think this is spin. I think this, because it, from my perspective, and you may be able to give me a different perspective, and I certainly would appreciate that, but it seems as if this really comes at a very bad time for them to have this, to make this decision. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, while they are turning off the pipelines preemptively, this was not something that they had much of a choice in. As you probably know, there was the largest oil spill in the history of North Slope activities just this March. It was it was caused by BP, and it was 200,000 gallons of oil. After that, they came under criminal investigation by the EPA and the Department of Justice, which led to them being required to close down 57 more of their oil wells once they started realizing how much corrosion there was in their pipelines. And throughout this investigation process, they realized that the pipelines that they just chose to preemptively shut down were very unstable. So this was not so much of a PR stunt. It's something that they were forced to do because they're under investigation for their safety practices.
It really makes the case that we are extremely vulnerable in terms of our dependence on oil. And that, as well, it also makes the case that all the promises that have been laid out to justify, for example, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, are fairly thin. and vulnerable as well.
Absolutely.
This really puts us in a difficult position. How do you think this is going to affect now some of the traditional pressures to drill and expand drilling in Alaska?
I really hope that, you know, members of Congress who advocate for drilling, you know, take a hard look at what's going on up there, because what they're advocating for, especially with drilling in places like the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge or Chinchak Lake, is giving even more of our special land, our nation's public lands, over to the oil companies at a time when we just can't trust them. I mean, I think if anything we've learned from this incident, we cannot trust that the oil industry is able to ensure that their practices up there are going to be clean. Now, Congress understands that this country needs a new energy future, but unfortunately it seems like all we've been seeing recently is drilling bills, and more drilling bills. And the polls show that that's not what Americans are looking for. Americans are looking for American technological know-how to put us on a new path, to put us on a road to a stronger economy. We can lead the world in the creation of new and clean energy. It's possible. You know, the solutions exist today, and we hopefully that this will be a spark plug and get us down that path.
To some extent, this is an opportunity for people to speak up and hold their feet to the fire and say, look, you know, this is a prime example of why we have to beware. If people want to do that, to speak up and to support your efforts, what's the best way for them to do so?
We have a website. It's www.alaskawild.org. And, you know, you're welcome to go to our website and get more information on any of the issues in Alaska. But, you know, our energy future depends on Congress, and Congress needs to understand that the American public want us to go down a different road. The oil industry is unstable, it's dangerous, and it's very, very messy. But there are solutions so that we don't have to just keep trying to drill our way out of the problem. So I would just encourage people to call their member of Congress, call their senators, and tell them that you want to see, you know, a new CAFE bill and renewable and funding for renewable energy and some of the technologies that exist today to put us on a better path to a better energy future.
Well, Kristen, I am 100% behind those thoughts. That's exactly what we need to do. It's something that we should have been doing a long time ago, and this particular incident makes it abundantly clear that, quite honestly, we have no choice.
Absolutely.
This is what we must do. And, you know, the thing that is irritating to me is the fact that it seems as if, to some extent, the oil companies, for the sake of maintaining their profitability, are putting us at risk, putting this country at risk, our future, our economy, our stability,
mm-hmm.
our way of life. And that's absolutely wrong. It's absolutely wrong. People do matter. And I think maybe Americans are beginning to really wake up to this kind of an emerging new reality that we do matter and we need to take back our power.
I hope so. I hope so. You know, I mean, we always say, and this is, you know, this is the reality. America uses 25% of the world's oil, and we have 3%. So we can drill in my backyard, in your backyard, in every national park and wildlife refuge, and we're never going to be able to make up that gap. We're always going to be importing at least half of our oil from foreign countries, and that includes rogue nations and, you know, areas that we don't have any control over.
Mm-hmm.
There's no stable future in oil, and we need to change, and we need to make a change now.
This is our moment. Make the most of it.
I hope so. I hope so. And, you know, the energy future is really important to us, but so are these special places that we advocate for. I mean, millions of Americans care about these places so much, and they're so ecologically significant, and there's just an abundance of wildlife up there and so many different types of species that we're trying to protect. You know, and that's part of this country's heritage, too, you know. This is part of who America is, and we have the ability to move forward while maintaining our special places and, you know, having a safe, clean energy future.
We can recreate a vision of America the way it really has been for 100 and some years, and we need to take it back, because there's no sense giving up the wonder for some, I don't even know quite what it is, some sense of security, which is obviously very false, because the world is not a very secure place right now.
Right.
So the concept of relying on that is the most important thing is false.
Right.
It's just false. So why don't we just simplify things a little bit and use our intelligence and gain real security by securing our energy and economic futures by becoming self-reliant.
Yeah, I mean, there's overwhelming public support for moving away from fossil fuels and towards a different energy future. And I just hope Congress will start reflecting what the majority of Americans already know and believe.
Well, Kristen, at some point we're going to call you back and have another chat about the wonder, okay, of the Alaskan wilderness.
Because
actually where I like to play most. Kristen Miller with the Alaska Wilderness League, I want to thank you so much for adding your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you so much.
With each new scuffle between the old guardians of industrial power and the people on the streets, in the neighborhoods and cities and countryside and wild places, it becomes ever more apparent that together we can make a difference. We have truth on our side, and as has been carved into the walls of history, time and time again, the truth shall set you free. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until next Thursday, or any time on the archives, when your voice of the earth returns, here on the Wild Side News.